You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. OneOfUs.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to OneOfUs.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
Do you love sci-fi, horror, and fantasy films? Then grab a badge for Otherworlds Film Festival, the country's premier sci-fi film festival. There'll be Q&As, panels, parties, and mixers. Rub elbows with up-and-coming and established filmmakers, as well as like-minded filmgoers. Come celebrate our 7th year, December 3rd through 6th, at the Galaxy Highland in Austin, Texas. Badges are now for sale at OtherworldsFilmFest.com. That's OtherworldsFilmFest.com.
You guys either owe me eternal thanks for turning you on to the mad genius that is Sion Sono, or you have every right to string me up and eviscerate me and decorate the internet with my entrails. Either one would be thoroughly justified response to making you watch the long version of what is already a very long film, Sion Sono's The Forest of Love on Netflix.
So when we get to cut you up, do we mix you with miso and throw you in a river?
Are you saying that it's the latter? Shit, I was kind of hoping for the former.
Oh no, I spent, the third option was just spending the whole time going, what? What?
What's the middle ground of these choices?
Is there a middle ground? It seems like Sion Sono responses rarely there is a middle ground. It's either I love this so much and I want it to be part of my life from now on, or Jesus fucking Christ, what is wrong with Japanese people?
Oh, I mean, that's just my general rule of watching Japanese stuff anyway. Just being like permanent head tilt and an eye squint of, huh?
Now, Japan has many different types of cinema. I just mainly am interested in stuff that's like this.
That's fair.
You're listening to Mindy.
Hello.
And Bradley.
Hello.
And I, of course, am Chris. Yes, we are talking about Sion Sono, who I've been actually a fan of his films for a long time, although I've never seen one of his biggest that's 4 hours long called Love Exposure. It played at Fantastic Fest years ago. Everybody raved about it. I was like, but it's 4 hours long. And I just never got around to it. I mean, I still probably will at some point because he has done a lot of movies that I really liked a lot, like Cold Fish or one of my favorite Japanese films ever, Why Don't You Play in Hell, which I call Get Shorty if it was fueled by eating too late at night nightmare while on psychedelic drugs. It's absolutely fantastic. This is one of these guys that regularly just does the most transgressive, bizarre movies. And believe it or not, his The Forest of Love, which is one of his most recent films that Netflix picked up, was originally released as, I think, like a 2.5 hour film.
151 minutes.
This was a TV show in Japan, way longer than that. So Netflix said, sure, we'll release it in 7 parts. And I said, you know, it'd be a fun thing to subject my critics to.
Yeah, that 7 parts added 2 hours and 15 minutes to that 151 minutes already.
As much as you can give a, not synopsis, but a starting point for what this thing is actually about. And let me just say, compared to a lot of his stuff, this is relatively normal. Which is to say, it's still insane, but it's considerably less bizarre and surreal than a lot of his other things. And it's also based distressingly closely to a true story.
Yeah, it kept saying that.
Which is a rabbit hole I don't know if you want to fall down.
It's pretty creepy.
I love history and true crime, so I already did.
These killings were so disturbing, the Western media chose not to report on them. They were like, we don't even know how we can describe these events without people complaining.
The media was like, just trust us, it's bad. You don't need any more details than that. And I think in Japanese media, they did that as well, for the most part. Some of them did press details, but for the most part, they're like, no, this is so horrifying.
The story in the film, when we first see it, it's some people in a car and in the woods. Even though they're clearly having a makeout session, there's a person in the back seat. I don't know why. That never becomes clear at all. They find this dead body and run back to the car. And this, what's happening in this scene is a bookmark point for the series. Like every episode starts here with a little time signature to say, okay, this is what time this episode at least starts in, even though they don't always stay that way. And it's 80s, which we see first, is all girls school, bunch of girls who are kind of like right out of like a Sailor Moon cartoon. I mean, yeah. They're dressed like it. They act like that ridiculously joyously. They're all great friends, or so it appears. And they're rehearsing for an all-female version of Romeo and Juliet. It's clear that one of the girls, Mitsuko, who is the shy one, is very much in love with Aiko, who is the one everyone loves to a ridiculous extent. Literally, people like are just crazy about her everywhere she goes.
They see her as Romeo because that's the part she's playing. That the whole thing, she's not really referenced as Aiko. She's referenced as Romeo.
Mitsuko is cast as Juliet, but Romeo is in love with Taiko, who is the director, and they kind of have a thing going on. But unfortunately, Aiko is hit by a car and killed. That's in the 80s. What happened there? That tragedy in the girls' school. Now, 1995. Follows a group of young filmmakers, two filmmakers who are very goofy and exaggerated. They're probably the most
stereotypical filmmakers to an extreme.
Well, but they're also kind of, like, for the longest time, they're the characters who most seem to have no idea that anything is real. They feel the most like cartoon characters. They're like, woohoo, life is wonderful.
How the hell did they get the budget for their sets? Because they're like, this is our subway set. This is our classroom sweat. It's like, no, you are broke-ass filmmakers. There's no way in hell you would have these sets in your house.
And they stumble across this guy.
Shin.
Who is just sitting on the street playing his guitar to himself and go, hey, you look like a guy we should hang out with, so come with us.
And
you're going to make films with us. And, you're a virgin? Well, we'll take you to our friend, Taiko, who's all grown up and now punk rock and just all kinds of hot.
Self-proclaimed slut.
Blue hair.
Then they just don't get along at all. She goes, well, I have this friend who is Mitsuko, back from the earlier period, who I haven't seen for a while, but maybe she would do it. They are not alike whatsoever. She lives with her mom and her father in a big house. She doesn't leave her room. She hallucinates Romeo appearing half naked and masturbates frantically to the hallucinations and has got a memorial wall of her. Obviously not healthy. And she also is not really into hooking up with Shin. But this is where we introduce kind of the primary character of this thing, Maruta, who calls her out of nowhere. He says he knows her and owes her 50 yen and wants to give her back to her.
I.e., that's like a quarter. It's like, you let me have a quarter like 15 years ago, I want to give it back to you.
She agrees reluctantly after much, like, come on, this is bullshit, to meet the guy. The filmmakers happen across this and film the scene, show it to their friend Taiko, the punk rock chick, who freaks out, goes, oh my god, I know who that guy is, and he's dangerous. And thus really starts the crazy, expansive plot of this movie that literally I am just was so startled to find out the degree to which it was accurate, which involves rape and murder and hallucinations and dismembering of bodies, twisting of alliances, huge amount of characters that come in to the story. And
yet the most unrealistic part for me was Marita's music career.
Also apparently true. Futoshi Matsunaga is the real life person, or one of the people, because there's more than one serial killer in this. Yes, I forgot to mention, they establish early on in that first segment, they're like, oh my god, someone's been killed, and you keep seeing reports of, we're looking for the serial killer who's been murdering someone with a stolen police gun. And the question you're going during this is, which one of these characters, that many disturbed characters in this plot, is actually the serial killer? Not that it matters, because they're all equally capable of being the serial killer. By the time it's revealed for sure, you're like, it literally could have been any one of them, and any one of them could go to jail for murder.
Oh yeah, I was mentioning to my husband, it's like, it's so bizarre, and granted, it may just be this is the type of people this guy attracts, but it's like, every one of these characters is awful. They're all horrible, horrible people who allow horrible things to happen, and it's just every single one of them. There's not a single person that is good.
Some of them are worse than others,
yes,
though. And some of them have a little bit of shame.
Tycho appears to be the most aware of what's happening character. Everyone else is like so mesmerized by Joe, who really was kind of like a cult leader in his weird sort of way. He easily could have started an actual cult, as it appears, the real life version. In the show, it's surreal. You're like, is it going to turn out this guy's got some weird mutant power or some shit? She's the only one that she sleeps with him. And even though her sister is sleeping with him first and engaged to him, but she doesn't care because she is, as they say, a self-proclaimed slut, which she loves to point out at every opportunity.
She says it a lot.
She does. So it's not us judging her. She is self-judging. She's doing it because she's just going through the motions in life in general. She doesn't appear to ever really think that Joe is that great and seems to see him for what he is.
And also later on, she does it to try to protect Mitsuko.
Joe, I love the character Joe. That's why I kept watching the series, even though what we were seeing, very creepy, morbid. Ugh. But like you said, Joe could be a cult leader. Joe's the type of cult leader who would have a cult on the side, and the cults would war out when they found out about each other. And I've read a couple of things about cults. This actor nails it. He is always in control of every situation. There's like even subtlety about the performance of his power over people. When he's like, oh, let's all get drunk, yeah! And like just ignites the room, and then you'll just kind of see him while everyone around him is chugging sake and wine. He's just kind of sipping and swirling his glass. He's not even really taking part in it, because then he would give up control. And I thought that's just brilliant filmmaking right there. I want to keep praising it, but my brain couldn't handle a lot of the visuals. It was very upsetting, and I'm still a little shook about what I've seen. I'm the guy in the theater that like got visually upset when, you know, Matt Damon in, I think it was Good Will Hunting, said, my father used to put cigarettes out on me. And I'm still, to this day, like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. And
not
then, you
Matt
know,
Damon.
Exactly. And then we have a scene that involves that phrase in this series, and I almost threw up watching it.
It's very disturbing and is intentionally so. It's kind of a supercut of all the things that this director is fetishy about. Like, almost everything that happens in this movie that's significant is also something that was a big part of another one of his movies. I mean, right off the bat, Why Don't You Play in Hell, which is like this gonzo film crew, like who goes insane and gets involved in murder right here. You know, that's the one part that appears not to have been based specifically on the real story. I don't think there was any filmmakers following him around.
Well, that's good.
We should be grateful for that, or that footage would exist. It's all really well shot. It's really well acted. It's an incredible conception and plan that's played out. But ultimately, there is no reason to release a long version of this. All reports, the 2-hour, 15-minute one was already really long and accessible. It's repeating itself, but in a slightly different way. Mm-hmm. I like this. I like it a lot. But then when it was time to watch another episode, I'd be dreading it.
I didn't mind the length so much. It was the fact that it all went up to 11 from the very first minute. There was no growth in that. There was no build. Brad mentioned the subtlety of the cult leader. And maybe in his actions that I didn't notice as much, but in the way he interacted with people, I didn't see subtlety at all. He was just flat out honest. This woman is my bitch. I do this. They like to get hit. That was part of the disturbing visuals for me, was that, and I didn't understand how other characters went along with it beyond the explanation of they're all just horrible people. He flat out abuses them. They say they're being abused. They act in an abused way. And yet everyone else seems to be okay with it. That's going up to 11 with no builds, and everyone just seems to be okay with being there.
He doesn't try ever to show you how it's possible this guy could successfully be this manipulative.
Right.
He treats it like it really is some sort of mutant power the guy has, that people just have no choice and get sucked into his world, especially when it's like the parents of people he's trying to seduce, and then he seduces the parents, and he's just murdering people left and right, but never really directly. He's having other people do it for him, but in a way that he didn't even tell him to. It's odd the way all that is assembled together, but it never stops wanting to be funny at the same time. You're laughing, but you feel terrible about laughing. There's like a whole sequence towards the end with one of the girls and her parents and her sister where they get super punk rock, like ridiculously punk rock, and it's fucking funny. I laughed out loud several times, and it goes to the darkest possible fucking place. And I was still kind of laughing.
I didn't see any of it coming. I was blown away each time. I don't know why. I mean,
I didn't understand how the allegory related to everything. What was the deal with Romeo and Juliet? Other than they die at the end, what is the deal with using this as a metaphor throughout the entire film?
Your guess is as good as mine. I thought it just kind of expressed this weird, illusory, romantic ideal that the one character had, Mitsuku.
But it's both of those characters are obsessed with it. And then she comes then and interacts with some of the other characters too. So it's like Romeo and Juliet are very central in regards to allegory. And I'm curious if any of you really got a clear picture of what that allegory was.
I did not, other than it involves romantic elements and ends in horrible tragedy.
Yeah, but they also mention Sid and Nancy a couple times, and yet they don't really build on that image.
Well, Sid and Nancy are also Romeo and Juliet, you know, throwing society to the winds and living how they want, and then they die.
But that's much more applicable, so why didn't they focus on that imagery?
Well, because they don't usually let schoolgirls perform Sid and Nancy.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if they had spent too much time on the punk rock, that joke would have gotten really cloying and old at a certain point. Yeah. I'm glad they spent just as much time as they did with it. There are things in here that definitely get overplayed. The whole idea of them making a film gets overplayed. Once again, that appears to be the one thing that's definitely, totally and utterly manufactured for this film. Watch the first episode, maybe even the first two. You could probably skip most of the middle and then come back for the last episode.
Yeah, the ending very much felt like the ending of a movie, not the ending of a series.
Well, everything kind of comes together all neatly. As neat as a murder spree filmmaking back and forth schoolgirl journey can be, I suppose.
With the weirdest sort of soliloquy of, and by the way, here's what was really happening this whole time speech that goes on. I'm like, this is like, if a movie did this and it was being sincere about it, I would be critical of it, but they're playing it for laughs. I don't even know what to think.
Well, that's just it. When she's giving her speech, is she Mitsuko or is she the woman in the movie that's about to be killed giving that speech? It's bonkers. Gonzo, is that what you said earlier? I think that's the best way to describe the narrative of this. Totally gonzo.
Well, let's go to final thoughts. Bradley, why don't you get us started?
I want to say I enjoyed this, but I'm disturbed and I don't like being disturbed. I'll watch something like this again, though. His biggest popular work when I was a kid was Suicide Club.
Good film. Apparently there's a sequel to that that gets really totally serious, which is weird because Suicide Club is kind of played for laughs in a weird, horrific sort of way.
It is. I didn't know it was a comedy until years later when I talked to someone who was obsessed with it. I really like long narratives like this. One of my favorite things of all time is a reveal of a scene from a different vantage point years later. Like when the character says, oh, I'll tell you what it was all about. And then we just see her in the situation that we've seen before, but from a different camera angle. And the character is like seething. That always creeps me out because, you know, that applies to real life so well. Like, who knows what people are thinking in any given situation? Ooh. I really like the character Joe. I thought the con stuff was great. People can see stories like this and they'll say, that won't ever happen to me. And it didn't happen to everyone in this story either. There were two or three characters that right away, and unfortunately sometimes not right away, said, I can't follow this guy anymore. I'm just going to disappear. I think you should do the same. And then they vanish from the situation. And that is the correct way to handle such a situation, by the way. Just disappear from it. Also, I might watch the next Sion Sono film. We'll see. I'm going to give this 7 awkwardly perverse yet innocent dances to 10 tracks of canon in D minor.
Bradley, you should try his Tokyo Tribe, which is his gangster musical.
A gangster musical?
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Wow.
Mindy.
I want to say something directly to the person listening to this review. This film and this series has very graphic depictions of domestic abuse. And on top of that, and it says this in some of the episode warnings, it also has pretty graphic depictions of suicide and suicide attempts. If that is something that will trigger you, do not watch this. It is not worth your mental health and psychological health. You did not deserve to be put in that place to begin with. You don't need a piece of art to take you back there. It's okay to protect yourself.
That being said, it's so much fun.
Right. Now, on to the review aspect of it. I enjoy crime stuff because it gets to get into a psychological aspect of history that just plain history doesn't. So I watched this wanting to find the pieces that were Futoshi Matsunaga. Who cares? He's a serial killer. I don't care if his name's pronounced wrong. And what parts of it were Junko Ogata, which is the serial killer and his accomplice? What parts of it were things that they actually did? And how was that able to be played dramatically and being played theatrically? This thing was off the wall. It had really good, extreme visuals in a lot of time, but they were very disturbing. Many parts of it were very disturbing. The abuse was disturbing in particular. I don't exactly know how I feel about this because all these messages, like the allegory to Romeo and Juliet, for example, that I mentioned earlier, there were allegories to toxic masculinity and how women should be. You were both men. I know I grew up with a sense of virginity culture, and that fucks you up. I didn't know whether he was doing a positive aspect on virginity culture and toxic masculinity or a negative. So I didn't know whether or not I should be mad at what it was saying or not. So it was like, if you don't mind spending this whole thing being kind of confused about how you're supposed to feel, you'll be fine. Despite how disturbing it is comedically disturbing. And despite how dark it is just funnily weird. I am going to give it 7 bottles of beer that you are being forced to chug because your cult leader says so out of 10.
Man, this thing is so weird and so long. I don't even know if I would openly recommend it to people from Fantastic Fest, which is like the exact crowd of people who might like something like this. Some of them are going to love it, and some of them would never speak to me again for recommending it. And you're right, Mindy, for the things you're saying about it being warning. That's only the tip of the iceberg for stuff in here that might trigger some people. This whole movie is a giant trigger warning. Like you said, there's something about you like, what are your intentions, sir, towards my viewer? And it's unclear. Like, for instance, what you were speaking of, the character who attacks the notion of women being told what to do and being forced what to do is Joe, which is bizarre. He's like, no, you're totally wrong. Everything you're saying about women is wrong. But at the same time, he uses all this information to manipulate women to get what he wants.
Yeah, he was the one attacking rape culture, and yet he was the one using it.
There's a lot of stuff in here that's confusing, and I suspect it's all supposed to be somewhat intentionally contradictory. But I can't say I didn't enjoy watching this. I'm glad it wasn't any longer than it already was. There's a point that anyone would go, okay, I feel like I got it. I am a huge fan of Sion Sono. I'm still mad you can only get a fraction of his works here. He's made a lot of movies and you can get a tiny percentage of them. Tokyo Vampire Hotel was the last one, which is also available as either a long movie or a television series, depending on which you want to endure. And I also enjoyed quite a bit. This is not the strongest thing I've seen by him as a viewer, but I'm still really glad I saw it. The actor who played Joe Murata, Kippai Shiina, fantastic. He just switches back and forth from being really charming to being really scary to being kind of pitiable almost at points. And then the actress who played Taika, who's basically the main female character here. The girl likes to refer to herself as a slut. Kyoko Hinami. She is wonderful. She's somebody who's so distinctive, I would have thought I would have seen her in something and not. But I hope she gets more roles after this. It's very good, but it's very difficult. And even I, who have a very strong stomach for this sort of things at points, was like, okay, Jesus fucking Christ, I got to take a break. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10 home electrocution kits.
Jeez. Which the real dude actually used.
Unless this is totally your sort of thing, do not fall down the wiki hole of Futoshi Matsunaga, because it is fucking disturbing. It's more disturbing than this actual series.
Yeah, the series actually toned down some of the stuff he did.
We'll leave you with that. I'm anxious to hear your reports, internet, of whether or not we are crazy people for like finding anything to like here at all, or we are stupid for not liking it enough.